Hello everyone! Welcome to another episode of Wealthy Unboxed. My name is Crystal and I will be your host for today. On this episode, we sit down with Brandon and Aaron to discuss their strategy around fundraising and more specifically, how they plan to leverage the Kickstarter platform to raise money for Wealthy. Throughout the episode, you will hear snippets of separate conversations they had with Mike Philby and Vinny McCauley, where they discuss Mike and Vinny's successful Kickstarter campaign launching ButcherBox, a meat delivery subscription company. So do sit back and enjoy the episode. Hi, Brandon. Hi, Aaron. Welcome to another episode of Wealthy. Today, we'll be talking a little bit about Kickstarter and the conversations you've had with Mike Philby and Vinny McCauley on their own experiences with Kickstarter. I'm going to be asking you a few questions and we will insert snippets of the conversation you had with Mike and Vinny throughout the episode so that folks listening can catch a glimpse of what that conversation with them was like and also hear your own responses to how Wealthy is thinking about leveraging the Kickstarter platform.
I love Kickstarter in the sense that it gives you a prudent way to start. It forces you to face your biases and assumptions early. If you do it well, you're listening to the market and you're either getting your validation or you're understanding where your pivot points need to be. And then lastly, people can put their money where their mouth is. Because I can say, Aaron, I'll buy this shoe, but until it's available for sale, you really don't know if Vin McCauley is going to buy the shoe. Like, you just can't take my word on it type thing. Oh, great shoe. I'd totally buy that. Well, where's your money, Vin? You know, it's like there's people say, that, oh, Vin, that's a great idea. It's a great idea. Where are you when I launch? Well, people are just being polite. Kickstarter takes the politeness out and really puts you in business. I mean, I think it's a fun, I can't think of a reason why you don't launch with a Kickstarter.
So before we get into the meat of the conversation about Kickstarter and the platform itself, why do you guys think that that is the best way to go about raising money for Wealthy at this stage of the company's growth?
I think we may have talked about this in a previous episode, but me and Brandon both want to bootstrap and we both want to put off raising money from institutional investors for basically as long as we can, just so that we can build this company based on our values and make sure that it's what we're doing is aligned with our vision and our mission. And Kickstarter is a way to get money in the door quickly and not have to give up equity. So that's why it's always been kind of a platform that we've been interested in launching with. And I think it's just easier to raise money that way versus trying to get money from a VC. So I mean, also kind of like validating demand has been another reason why we've wanted to do Kickstarter. So if we raise a decent amount of money on Kickstarter, then that indicates that there's actually a market for this product and then we can keep going forward versus if we're just trying to raise venture capital, we never really know if there's market demand, I guess, until we raise and then spend money and then see if people actually buy the product. So this is a way to kind of very early on in the process, understand who our target customer is and how excited they are about our product.
Yeah, 100% agree with all those points. The only point that I would add is that it's also an opportunity for us to create a little brand awareness. So being able to allow people who are even outside of our networks to get an understanding of what we're trying to accomplish with Wealthy and get some exposure to our products and brand. So that's another just benefit of why like a crowdfunding campaign like Kickstarter kind of makes sense for us right now.
That absolutely makes sense. What are your thoughts on leveraging the Kickstarter platform while keeping things lean? I know in your conversations with Vinny and Mike, you talked about how they'd hired people to help set up the campaign and record the videos. And I think they also got a consultant at some point to help them put everything together. And all of that costs money, but I know Wealthy is trying to operate really leanly. So what are your thoughts on
making sure that you put together a good Kickstarter campaign while not spending too much money, basically.
I think I'll give it a first go. So one of the ways in which we're trying to stay lean while still being able to prepare properly for this like crowdfunding campaign is by having these type of conversations with like Mike and Vinny. So they were able to share with us like a playbook. In our conversation, I think with both of them, they kind of mentioned that all the things that you get from like the consulting firms that kind of handle this can be boiled down to what they kind of put in their playbook. And so that alone kind of saves us the money that we would be spending on like a consultant to prepare for this Kickstarter campaign, just by like talking to them, getting their experience, their advice, and being able to kind of apply that to our own campaign. So that's one of the ways that we've kind of kept the cost down, and then just following some of the suggestions that they have inside of that playbook regarding like how much you should pay for a video. And a video is super important for a Kickstarter campaign, but at the same time, you don't want to break the bank. And so we've been looking for ways to really like have a quality video, but not like go overboard and like make it such a huge production that we never even break even on the video. So those are a couple of ways that we can kind of like stay lean while still preparing for a Kickstarter campaign.
And I'll just kind of elaborate on the video point that Brennan just brought up. So, I mean, with Kickstarter in general, there's not really too many expenses to running a campaign, but having a good video is pretty important to having a successful campaign. And we talked to some people who filmed it themselves on an iPhone versus other people who spent like $40,000 on the video, for example. And then, so I started reaching out to a bunch of different people, talking to some different kind of like video agencies. And we got quoted anywhere from like $20,000 to $100,000, with people saying you need to have little robots kind of zooming around the ground with cameras on them. You need to pay all these actors, things like that. And what we realized is basically like if we spend $25,000, $50,000, $100,000 on a video, then it's almost pointless, because that could be just as much or more than we actually end up raising. So we've really looked into ways to like, how can we film a really high quality video just by ourselves? So we've got recommendations on what apps to use on an iPhone, for example. And then instead of using someone like a video agency or someone to actually film it for us, one of the things that we've thought about is getting someone like that to be instead like a video consultant. So telling us what equipment we need, helping us with the script, potentially helping us with some editing on the back end. And that'll be like maybe like 10% of the cost of what it would be if we actually had them do all the work. So it's just kind of identifying what's important to like where we actually need to spend, and then figuring out how can we spend really as little as possible to get the biggest ROI possible.
Personally, like I think showcasing like who you're buying this from is important, but I think it depends on the product you're selling and the price point. If I was buying something for $8 on Kickstarter, I probably wouldn't care who was behind it. I would just want to know about the product. But if I was buying $120 worth of meat that I was going to feed to my three kids, I would want to know who this person is. So I think it's situational, but personally, like I'm a fan of kind of showing who's behind the curtain and building credibility through that.
You talked about, Aaron, that you had identified or observed that there was a leaning towards a founder-focused Kickstarter versus a product-focused Kickstarter. And with Waldy, the company is about a shoe, which is a product, right? And we're trying to get the message out there about the shoe and the benefits it brings to kids. But at the same time, you both have interesting stories. You guys are building a company. You guys are the brains behind the product that you're selling. And so how are you thinking about putting together this campaign? Are you thinking of focusing more on the shoe? I guess that makes sense to focus on the shoe, but are you kind of thinking of a hybrid style approach to the campaign?
I would say in general, we have thought about it more as a hybrid approach, because there's plenty of people who are following along and supporting supporting us because of us, not necessarily because of the product. And they don't necessarily really care about the product. They care about us. But then there's other people who we get on their radar and it's because of the product. So it's, I think it's about both. And it's also like we're competing against one of the most product-driven companies in the world, in Nike, where like everyone, just about everyone loves that product. So it's hard to kind of like focus solely on the product and get people to buy your product versus a Nike shoe, for example. So I think the founder focus has to come in there, and we have to kind of like humanize the brand a little bit so that people are willing to take a chance on us. So I think it's definitely a combination of both. And I think in the early days, we're thinking it's going to be a bit more founder focused. But then as we get up and running, as we continue to improve the shoe on the shoe, as more and more people are aware of the brand, then I think we want to move to more of a product focus.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it kind of goes back to a conversation that we were having with Vinny in terms of, I guess there was two points that came out of that. One, Vinny, and he kind of told some kind of anecdotal story about how he supported this company or this venture, and he didn't even believe in their product. But he believed in the two founders that were, you know, bringing this product to life. And so he wanted to really support them. And so there are going to be people out there who believe in us and may or may not necessarily believe in our vision, at least not yet. And so we want to make sure that we are providing them enough information so that they can really kind of, or enough of the narrative, or enough of the story so that they can kind of get, you know, involved in it in a way in which they're more attached maybe to us than to the particular product that we're trying to create. So I think that was one of the things that was mentioned in the conversation. The other one was, and I don't know if this was Vinny or if this was Mike, so I'm kind of confusing the two. But anyway, they talked about how products or campaigns that don't feature the founder, like in the video or whatnot, they really, there's no connection between those backers who don't know anything about the brand or about the founders. And so there's a lot of people who won't back it because they don't know anything about it. So we wanted to make sure that we told like our story alongside the story of our product and the story of our brand, so that there's some kind of attachment, some kind of appeal there. So those are the two things that came out of that conversation. That was really why we've kind of chosen like a hybrid approach to this like founder versus product centered marketing structure.
I think that is a good point about the connection between, you know, the audience and whoever your target market is and the founders. I think there has to be some kind of humanization of the brand. I think, Aaron, you said that. That brings me to my next question about connecting with the people who are buying the product, because clearly kids are not the ones who are going to be paying for these shoes. It's going to be their parents or family members who have money to be able to afford the shoes. And in the conversations you had with Mike and Vinny, you talked a little bit about rewarding your backers from Kickstarter.
I would have a shoe donation. So for somebody that doesn't want shoes, but wants to support you. So, hey, whoever gives this, we're going to create it, but we're going to give it away in your name. We did two ones that were kind of, you know, silly-ish. I think we had a tweet for $1. We'll tweet your name. We'll just shout you out for $1. For $5, I think we'd send you a cow mooing audio file. You know, so here was a way that people could support us without really, you know, if money's tight and somebody goes, listen, I'd love to support you, but I just don't have the $100 for the meet. You know, you go, you know, but your name shows up on the list if you give us $1 for a tweet or $5 for a moo audio file. So, I really think it's good to think deeply on those things as far as the rewards go. So you're talking about crowdfunding the reward segment. And I think the better you do some early birds. So you say, hey, listen, there's only 100 of these. Everybody gives 100 gets these, but after these are all sold, it's 125 to get the same thing, to get those first day early donations. My buddy used to have a Give Racism the Boot t-shirt from Timberland. It was like you can't find that t-shirt anymore. Something like that, you know, hey, let's give shoelessness the boot, you know, and it's a picture of your shoe. It's just a white tee, black and white, something like that. You could absolutely sell for people that don't want the shoe.
I just wanted to ask about your thoughts on giving people something back, especially parents or older people who are not going to be using the shoes that you guys are selling. Because obviously, again, it's a kids brand. How have you guys thought about that reward system?
So it's kind of funny because I have a lot of friends, I mean, from UChicago, from high school, from college. And whenever I see them, they're kind of like, you know, can I get a shoe in my size? Can I get a shoe in my size? Things like that. So there's definitely interest, and they're kind of saying that not necessarily even to wear it around, but just to be able to like say they have it or whatever. So I think there's a lot of interest even among people who are not necessarily going to wear the shoe to be kind of like part of this launch and to support us. So I've thought a lot about that. And I mean, we've had some different ideas. So one of the ideas, for example, is we could do signed sketches. So early sketches of the shoe, get our designers to sign them. Maybe you number it, say like 1 out of 50 or whatever. And then people can buy that. We have samples, right? So as we're going throughout this kind of like prototyping stage, we get different samples of the shoe. And I think people would also be interested in having one of those, for example, because that's another way to, you can't wear it, but it's another way of feeling like you're part of, you know, the company in the early days. So I think things like that could be pretty cool because we're not going to have shoes in every single size. We're not going to have them in adult sizes, at least not initially. So we've had to kind of get creative about giving things out to people that they value and that make them feel like they've actually got something of value that's cool. So I think there's a lot of different possibilities. We just have to be a bit creative with it.
Yeah, this is something that we've kind of like, I think Aaron like ended up creating like the spreadsheet of all these potential rewards that we could give backers. One of the more interesting things that came up, and this came up during our conversation with Vinny, is about being able to give away the product. So typically when you see these campaigns, it's almost like a pre-order. So what they do is you back us and we'll give you the product, or we'll give you the product before anybody else can get the product, or we'll give you several different varieties of the product. So like there's different ways to like back, or different, I guess, levels. And based upon the level in which you back that particular campaign, you'll get a reward that meets it. And for us, we're just a kids product. And so a lot of the people, kind of like Aaron's already mentioned, a lot of people, you know, who are in our networks can't wear it, or they don't even have kids who could wear it, or maybe know anybody within their immediate network who could potentially wear it. And so what we've talked about, and we've talked about a little bit later, was that we would actually have a giveaway. So if you were to back us, instead of you getting the product, we'd be able to take that product and hold an event in which we like give that product out to kids. And so that's another way in which people can feel involved and feel a part of it and actually make some kind of like impact twofold, one for Worldy and one for, you know, a kid who can now receive that shoe. I guess another thing, and this is a less altruistic, but a chance for them to kind of feel like they pioneered, or they were with us at the beginning, is, and we've talked about this, I don't know whether or not we'll actually use this, but have like a very high amount, you know, I don't know what the amount would be. We've kind of discussed, if you were to do that, then to feature your name, your signature, something on the product, and to do that for the lifetime of the product, whether it's like in the insole, like putting their name in the insole for that particular shoe, and for the lifetime of, you know, Worldy, and as long as we're selling this particular style shoe, your name will be in the insole. And so that's a way to kind of like cement yourself and like, okay, yeah, I was one of the originators, or one of the originals. And I, you know, now my name is actually like attached to the brand in a way in which people will continue to see it as long as Worldy is around. So those are a couple of things that came up that we are still messing around with and brainstorming, but nevertheless, felt interesting to us.
No, I think those are really, really cool ideas. People will really gravitate towards that. And that also got me thinking, there was a part of the conversation that you had with, I think it was Mike and Mike specifically, where he was talking about how important it is that the first day of the Kickstarter campaign, you raise a lot of money, at least the most amount of money. because it lends you guys credibility, and it also allows more people to see that traction and jump on the bandwagon, right? So it kind of helps raise more money, the more money you make on the first day.
I mean, one thing I think we did well, at least, was we created a good amount of like urgency and fear of missing out with those early bird rewards. So, for instance, maybe at day 10 or whatever, there were only 7 3-month early bird rewards left. So we sent an email and we were like, "Hey, only 7 left," or something was the subject line. And then we talked about how, we expect these to sell out within the next 2 days. Wanted to give you like first access if you're interested in the early bird pricing for the 3-month reward, or something like that. So I think I think just having your ear to the pavement as far as where your rewards stand, letting people know about that is like a free way to drive some dollars and drive some action from people who maybe haven't taken any action yet.
But then part of that is, right, you have to garner interest from the beginning leading up to that day so that on that day you have all this interest or you have the numbers that you need to carry you through the rest of the campaign, right? And I don't know if you guys have a strategy around creating that sense of urgency or FOMO, but I thought it was a very interesting point and I want to hear your thoughts on that.
I guess I can take first stab. So, and that's something that we've consistently heard from a bunch of people who've done like Kickstarter campaigns is that you have to meet that goal on that first day, how important that first day is. Because once you start seeing that ball roll, once you start seeing that company pick up momentum, you want to be a part of it. You want to be a part of something that's winning. And so it's very important to like have that set up on day one, whether it's going out and making sure, and possibly it's just a bunch of this. Going out and making sure that your backers that you know within your network are going to contribute day one. And then Vinny mentioned that he had his credit card ready for day one and he swiped it day one because he knew that he was going to have to be able to donate and be a part of it. And I think having reward tiers that are exploding, so they only, the first 100 or the first 20 or the first 30 get this particular reward. And then after that, it's like closed off. And so you've got people, you built like this scarcity. And so everybody wants to kind of like, yeah, I want to be the first, within the first 20 or the first 100 or whatever it might be to contribute so that I can get this particular reward because that's not going to be out there anymore if I don't. So those are some of the ways in which you can kind of create that FOMO. Later on in the conversation with Vinny, he mentioned that continuing that momentum is a little bit more difficult with a Kickstarter campaign traditionally. And we've talked to a Kickstarter like consultant. I don't know if they're a consultant, but someone from Kickstarter who more or less is helps you out with the campaign. And what they mention is that, day one and day 30 or whatever the campaign ends, those are your biggest contribution days. And throughout that other time period, not a whole lot of movement. And so how do you create incentives to keep people, I guess, involved in the campaign, even when day one has passed us by and we haven't reached our last day, and possibly it's other exploding rewards that are being offered, and the whole casino effect, seeing that number go up and being able to be a part of it. So, some of the things that were kind of mentioned to capture that FOMO.
Definitely agree with everything that Brandon said. And I think we've talked to enough people, and it's called KickTracks or something like that. And it basically has data from every single Kickstarter campaign ever. And so I looked through that for like a few hours, and basically every campaign more or less follows the same trend. There's a ton of money that comes in on the first day. In the middle, there's almost nothing. And then day 28 through 30, then it goes up again, but not quite as high as that first day. So I think we know that it's going to follow that trend. We know that it's going to be hard to get people to come in the middle. But like Brandon said, one way you can try to get more through those that middle phase is to do those exploding rewards and things like that. And then for us, I think now the focus is just how do we make sure that how do we get as many people as possible to donate on that first day? Because I'm thinking, for me, for example, one of my friends was doing a Kickstarter and it launched. I wouldn't necessarily just say, oh, like on the first day, I have to donate. If I didn't know that that's important, I'd be like, oh, I have time. Like there's 30 days. So I think part of it is just kind of education and telling people like, hey, you don't necessarily get anything more if you donate on the first day versus the second day or the third day, but it really helps us out. And maybe if we're able to like hit this goal on the first day, then we can 5x our goal versus like 2xing it if we didn't have as successful of a first day. So I think we don't necessarily have a plan for that other than just communicating that to people. But I think that'll be important to just tell as many people as possible, like, hey, if you can, it would really help if you donate basically in like the first hour of the Kickstarter campaign being live.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that because I was also thinking about, I think you had asked Vinny about starting the campaign without a product in your hand. And the advice that he was giving was that you don't want to wait too long after the Kickstarter campaign to get the product into people's hands.
I think it's situational. Like, if you legitimately can't produce the product without this money, that's one thing. And I think that could be a really compelling story that you can tell. It's like, hey, you're gonna like birth this project into existence. Help me do it. That's an exciting story. Personally, I think a campaign would have more success if there was more certainty with like, hey, the product's made. Here's all the photos of it. Here's a 360 video of it. Here's a video of cool people wearing it and testimonials about how awesome it is. And we're going to send it to you within 3 days of you of our Kickstarter campaign closing. As a consumer, I'm like, okay, cool. I will receive this. I get that. I'm more confident paying $120 for that product than I am about something that you haven't even produced one of yet.
But the issue is, if you don't have a product yet, is that going to be a taint on the brand? Because you can get the product to people quickly after the Kickstarter campaign. And what he had said was that part of the strategy could be that we don't have the brand or the product in our hand yet because we need to raise money in this campaign to get the product out into the market. So what you said was interesting, that you could just be honest with folks and say, hey, we need this money. So contribute on this day around this time because that helps us gather momentum to keep going. So I guess that's one way to think about it, which I think is an interesting way to do it. But to the question though, what is the strategy around the product, getting the product to the backers from the Kickstarter campaign? Is it going to come close after the campaign or later because you guys have to raise money to make the product and then deliver it to those who buy?
I think initially we were thinking, let's raise money first and then use that to basically kind of like finance production and then send it out after that. But the timelines are just so long in footwear that that could be like a 4, 5, 6 month process. And kind of to your point from earlier, I think if you end the campaign in January and then send out shoes in July, then that might be a bit of a bad experience for the customer. And you, I mean, it's your first experience with these customers as a brand, so you want to make a good first impression. So now I think we're kind of swinging towards the other end of the spectrum, that we want to have it basically as finalized as possible and get it into the customer's hands as quickly as possible after the end of the campaign. So we haven't necessarily made a concrete decision one way or the other, but I think right now we want to minimize time to get the shoes into people's hands.
Yeah, I think that's right. And another reason why we have to kind of shorten that lead time is because of the nature of the product. So we've kind of discussed this before, maybe. I mean, it's a kid shoe, and that means it's made for kids, and kids' feet kind of grow pretty rapidly relative to like an adult foot. So you want to make sure that when they're making that order for that particular shoe, that shoe still will fit their kid when it's delivered to them. So that means it necessitates making that time period a bit shorter. But on the other hand, this is something that came up in our conversations with, I believe, both Mike and Denny, is that there's an expectation amongst people, backers on Kickstarter, that sometimes the products aren't ready. And so they're knowing that they're backing with the anticipation of it not being available in the next week, 2 weeks, a month, or whatever it might be. So they, as long as there's like that communication element that exists between the founders or the company and the backers, then typically they're understanding. So we want to make sure that we're doing a good job of communicating. And then we can use that communication to our advantage, actually, because then we were able to get a better understanding of why someone who may not be in our network decided to back us, or what like resonated with them. And that helps us tweak our marketing a little bit and get a better understanding of like, okay, this is how we should be presenting the shoe because we're getting a lot of people who are backing us for this particular reason. So it's just another opportunity for us to like get more data and understand our consumers a bit better while at the same time creating a product that's meeting the needs that we're kind of like identifying throughout the course of this process. So I think those are some like good reasons why having a little bit of a lead or lag time, I forget which one is which, but why having that kind of built in there kind of helps out because that gives you just that chance to have that kind of dialogue, to have those type of conversations where you can capture that type of information.
So do you guys plan on calling every single backer like Vinny did in his Kickstarter campaign?
You know, it really kind of depends. It depends on how many we have. I think right now, like we've talked about it coming out of it, we're like, yeah, we should take and make an effort to like call every single one, or contact every single one and really like go and do that type of homework in order to really engage because it's going to be like one of our first opportunities to really engage with our consumer. And so we don't want to miss out on that. It seems daunting. Like I think they had 1,000+ backers. And so it seems really daunting to make that type of call. But again, like you can kind of create mechanisms to kind of help you out. So it likely wouldn't just be Aaron and I. We would likely try to create a team to be able to tackle that big of a I wouldn't call it a problem, but that big of a task. So I hope that we can do it. It'll be interesting to see how many backers we get, and that'll better determine the feasibility of that.
Right. And that made me think we are lawyers after all. So we have to think about, the risks that are involved in any endeavor. So, and I know Aaron, you'd asked this question to both of them about what their thoughts were, what their strategy was if the Kickstarter had failed.
Just sort of binary looking at it, it's great. You missed your goal. Everyone gets their money back. You walk away. No harm, no foul. No investors are out. You've lost a month of your time, not years of your time. So to me, it's that. If there's a reason that you didn't hit it, oh, we didn't execute the plan. Like if there's another outlying factor that would cause you to say, there's still an idea here, just because we didn't raise the Kickstarter, it doesn't actually mean anything. And I don't even know how Kickstarter is today versus when we did it. Does it still have the same site traffic? I don't know. Are Wall Street Journal writers still pulling ideas from the homepage? I don't know. That was true back then. And so if you don't get funded, I wouldn't say that's a bad idea, but I would go in, like, I wouldn't launch this thing unless you've got the money pre-raised.
We obviously don't plan for the Kickstarter to fail, but it is a possibility. So, do you guys have any thoughts for what happens in that scenario?
I think so. We talked about this recently, and I think basically what we said is we would do kind of like a postmortem on the campaign, see what went wrong, what went well, maybe where we need to be better or invest more heavily. And then also just understand, do we feel like still that there's something to this idea, or does it make sense to pivot or maybe go back to the drawing board? So I think it would just be try to look at things objectively, understand where we messed up, if at all, and then if it still makes sense to pursue this idea. So I don't think it makes sense to throw good money after bad. So if the campaign just completely flops, then I won't say that, oh, for sure, we're gonna just run it again. We probably would, because there's not much downside to doing that. But if it flops like two, three, four times in a row, then at that point we would probably have to maybe reconsider our approach or the idea.
That just reminds me of a part of the conversation you had with, I think it was Mike, who was talking about the strategy that they had for their own Kickstarter campaign, which was they had a minimum goal of how much they wanted to raise because they knew that as long as they hit that goal, they'll be able to keep the campaign running and be able to raise more money, obviously, than what their goal was.
The other thing that does help is having stretch goals. Basically, I think we had three, and it basically incentivizes your Kickstarter backers to both up their pledge amount, their reward, so maybe like a 1 month box to a 3 month box, and then also incentivizes them to like share your Kickstarter campaign with their friends, which was like a common ask in our backer updates that we would email out. So I think our first stretch goal was if we hit $100,000, we would unlock chicken and pork rather than like just having beef. And then I think the next stretch goal was maybe like $150,000, and that was free bacon. We put like a free pack of bacon in everybody's box and people went nuts for that. And that like really helped generate some activity. And, you know, the bacon cost us $4. So that's a good ROI. I can't remember what our third stretch goal was, if we even had one. But the point is to basically to have stretch goals, because it's an excuse to talk about something in the emails and also really harness the energy of your backers.
Again, as lawyers, we always have to think of contingency plans. And so is that something that you guys will also embrace, or are you thinking of something else?
Yeah, I think we're definitely going to embrace that. I think that strategy kind of helps build a type of momentum that leads to a successful like Kickstarter campaign. So that goal that we'll present, that the goal that you see on the Kickstarter campaign page, is going to be like our minimum goal. So that's the threshold. That's like, we have to at least reach that, but we go back and we have to really analyze what went wrong and figure out what changes can be made in order to make for a successful campaign in the future. But that's just the minimum. That's basic. And beyond that, we're planning. Okay, if we get this amount, so this stretch goal, then these are some things that we can do, and so on and so forth. And I think backers can get confident in that we are actually creating a plan based upon whatever we're able to get into the door, and figuring out already ways in which we can effectively and efficiently use the campaign contributions to help grow Worldy. And I think that's really how we are approaching this. Is we got a minimum goal and we know what we're going to do with that. But then we have goals on top of that. And if we reach those other goals, then we also have plans for it. So I think that's been a way that people have approached, you know, Kickstarter campaigns in the past. And we've kind of taken that to heart, and we've done that here internally at Worldy.
I think it also goes to the demand validation point. So you want to set the goal high enough where you're actually proving out that people want the product. But you don't want it to be so high where you're like, if you set it at like 50,000 and you raise 45,000, you're like, man, I wish we could just have that 45,000. You don't want to be in that position, because basically everything helps. So we're trying to kind of strike that balance between making it high enough where, okay, people actually have to put their money where their mouth is, and we're actually doing a test to see if there's any room in the market, but low enough where we don't basically preclude ourselves from getting funds that would really help us.
Yeah, I think that's a good strategy. That's a workable strategy. And especially to the point about bringing the backers along, letting them know that, hey, this is the minimum that we want to raise, and this is what we're going to use it for. But we want to raise more, because this is the other things that we also want to use this money for. And Aaron, you're absolutely right about the demand test aspect of the goal that you're setting. So yeah, that makes sense. Well, thank you guys for sharing your thoughts on the Kickstarter campaign in general. And it seems like that's the first part of your fundraising strategy. But if you could talk a little bit about how the Kickstarter fits in your fundraising strategy generally, and what that strategy itself is.
So I would say for crowdfunding, really the goal is to help us get the business off the ground. So it's to make this first basically fund production and get our product to the market. And then hopefully from there, I mean, running profitably or somewhere close to break even, where me and Brandon can just basically self-fund it for a significant period of time. Like I was saying before, make sure that the company is actually aligned with our mission and our values. And then when we feel like we want to take the brand to the next level, so, you know, reaching scale, going national, whatever it is, then it makes sense to maybe bring in angel investors, VCs, things like that. So we're definitely not opposed to those things. We just want to push it off as much as possible. And Kickstarter kind of allows us to do that.
Yeah. And we've also talked about potentially doing another friends and family round out, you know, after a Kickstarter. So maybe doing it via like safes or something like that. And that's just another way to bring in a little bit more capital without necessarily giving away equity. I know that SAFEs make the promise that, you know, once you hit a round of funding, there's going to be some kind of like equity given out. So we're still wanting to be able to raise capital while at the same time have a great deal of like autonomy of control over where Worldy is going. And like Aaron mentioned, eventually we're going to get to the point where we want to scale. We want to grow a little bit faster than just like bootstrapping is allowing us to do. And that's when institutional investors kind of come into play. We've also talked about the idea of angels or super angels, especially if the relationship dynamic really makes sense. If there's something beyond just the funding that they can offer. So maybe like access to whatever network, filling in gaps that we recognize in our own company structure. If they're able to do that kind of stuff, then perhaps it makes sense even before we do some kind of seed or pre-seed or whatever it is to bring in like an angel and allow that relationship to help Worldy grow.
Sounds good. When should we be expecting a campaign from you guys? Is it in the nearby future or maybe a year or two away?
I definitely don't think a year or two away. We definitely want to do it sooner than that. Kind of to your point before that we're lawyers, at the same time, I don't want to commit to a date and then we miss it. But I would say sometime in the next, our goal is sometime in the next 6 months. But Brandon, feel free to jump in and if you have another idea.
No, I like giving these vague dates. That way we can always kind of move and adjust accordingly. So yeah, I think in the next 6 months is a good target. We have some internal targets. We've been working with our product development team, working with our branding and marketing team, trying to come up with a decent strategy when it comes to like rolling this thing out. And so a lot of it's going to be based upon where we're at in product development. And that's a moving target. We have some dates, but they're definitely not concrete. So we don't want to make any kind of like concrete plans on movable dates. So we're holding off swearing and saying that this is going to be it until like we get a little bit more information and we get a little bit further along when it comes to product development.
And the other thing that I would say just in general, because some people are starting to ask like, you know, why is this process taking you guys so long, things like that. So if we wanted to have a product in the market, we could. It's just we don't want to put something out there that we're not confident in or that doesn't feel differentiated. So we've gone back to the drawing board a couple of times to try to improve things and make them basically we want a product that really blows people away. We don't want something that's just like a copycat. So that's part of the reason why we're taking a little bit longer than maybe other people or than we might have thought in the past. It would basically in the past, maybe we thought it would take us like a year to do some of this. And now it's taking us like 2+ years. And that's because we really want to launch with a product that's really, really great.
Yeah. And I think that customers will appreciate having a product that is not just another one in the market, but something that really truly meets their needs. So we won't hold you guys to fault for taking your time. But thank you so much for sitting with me to have this conversation. These are exciting times. We're looking forward to seeing the Kickstarter campaign when it eventually launches. But cheers to you, Brandon and Aaron, for the work you're doing and the product that you're building. I think kids would love to see the shoe and to use the shoe and to only have one shoe to worry about when they have to go play sports. So thank you again and looking forward to our next conversation.
Always a pleasure. Thank you. Looking forward to it.